welcome to the second ever episode of the New Mind Noise Network podcast. I'm your host, Paris, and this episode features reviews of the new records by Settle Your Scores, Haggard Cat and Tiny Moving Parts. As always, I'll be joined by my excellent co-hosts, Billy, Max and Jameson. But this time we're switching it up a bit, as Billy and Max are actually doing their podcasts together from now on, which, you know, is great. There's great playoff between them. Rounding off this entire podcast, I did a chat with Rich from Happy Accidents about the Thermals and their record, The Body, The Blood and The Machine, which is a really nice chat and it's a really good record that I recommend you listen to, but you can make your mind up on that by the end of the podcast. Firstly, I just want to talk to you about a gig I went to the other week, which was Frank Turner at the O2 Academy in Leicester. And I'm doing this mainly to get you hyped about the support act, Homeless Gospel Choir. Someone that I didn't like on record at all. His voice really grated on me and I didn't find it very original. But that has all completely changed since seeing it live. You know, charm radiated off him and he completely appeals to the punk in me. You know, when he starts every song with, "This is a political protest." He did the first few songs actually in the middle of the audience, which was awesome, playing only on an acoustic guitar. He kind of had this campfire feel by making everyone crowd around him as he played. I love when people do that without a mic or anything, because it really makes you feel like you're in a basement with them. And yeah, it really worked in Homeless Gospel Choir's favour, made everything feel really homely, and it was so punk and so interesting. And he's someone that I actually want to talk more too and get to know a bit better, so I'm hoping I can do some kind of podcast thing with him eventually, because his songs are really honest and their stories, and like I said, I can really relate to him. So yeah, Homeless Gospel Choir, I'd really recommend you see live next time he comes to the UK, or you know, if you're from America, I'm sure you've got more opportunities to see him. Yeah, see him live before making any judgments, because if I had the choice, I probably wouldn't have chosen to see him and I would have really missed out. So yeah, a really nice surprise. The next band were not so much of a nice surprise. They were the Arkells and, you know, they were boring and forgettable. They're not even really a rock band, so I don't feel as bad about having nothing to say about them. Were they a decent choice for Frank Turner fans? Probably. You know, the crowd really enjoyed it, but it was just a bit lackluster and nothing that I want to spend my time talking to you about on this podcast. Headlining the show was Frank Turner, you know, someone who is an incredible inspiration to anyone who wants to make music. His set was banger after banger and so much fun, playing songs from all parts of his career. There were loads of crowd pleasers. Everyone was well up for it and jumping about. You know, I really actually liked the stage setup because they had these TVs on boxes and the band were positioned around the stage. And it was really awesome. There was 1,000 people there, but Frank really makes it feel like you're just sitting around a campfire with him. Similar in a way to Homeless Gospel Choir, but obviously this is, you know, 1,000 people seeing Frank Turner that know nearly every word. And he has a real talent to him, Frank Turner. You know, this is one of his 2000th show and he's just completely perfecting the art of performing live. My only gripe about the show is that I would have loved my favourite songs to be a bit more spaced out on the set list. He fired through my favourite Tape Deck Heart songs pretty early, so there was nothing really for me to explode about later. This wasn't a problem for the rest of the crowd as they loved every second, it's just me. So yeah, the Frank Turner gig was great. He's doing an arena tour early next year. And you know, we're talking about a man who's done over 2,000 shows. He works his bum off and he deserves to be selling out massive arenas, so please buy tickets. Now, on to Billy and Max with their reviews of the new Haggard Cat and Tiny Moving Parts records.
Hello, listeners of Mind Noise Network. This is Billy Padmore. I'm joined with my good friend Max Constable.
Hey, what's up?
And we're going to be doing a special review because we're each reviewing one album and then we're going to talk about it. Max, do you want to do your album first?
Yeah, so I've been listening to Swell by Tiny Moving Parts. I've actually got a lot of love for Tiny Moving Parts.
Yeah,
a lot of affection for them. They're kind of part of the emo revival. So, like, they're on Triple Crown Records in the US.
Who else is on that? I don't know that label.
Like Caspian and Foxing and Sorority Noise. And they're on Big Scary Monsters here as well.
Oh, okay,
so it's like... It's that kind of mathy, like, quite technical kind of emo thing, which is getting quite popular at the moment. And I often find with that kind of thing that it's all a bit too, like, heady, quite cerebral. And that the kind of technicality of it detracts from the actual songs. But I find with Tiny Moving Parts that, like, that's not a problem. They've got a real heart to them. And, yeah, like, their last album, Celebrate, was really good. And this one is, like, is kind of a continuation from there. So if you're not familiar with them, like, he's got a really distinctive guitar style. Like, he does a lot of tapping, a lot of kind of natural harmonics. It's really reminiscent of, like, that kind of acoustic fingerstyle thing, like Andy McKee and John Gom. But I listened to a podcast with him recently, and apparently...
The guitarist from Tiny Moving Parts.
Yeah, yeah, Dylan Mattheisen, his name is. I'm probably butchering that word.
It's just John. It's actually just John.
Oh, shit.
One word, like Prince.
Yeah.
Yeah,
just a symbol.
Yeah.
No.
Just a small part that moves.
And he... And he, yeah, he said that develops, like, really, really naturally. Like, he was just practicing guitar, and he just wanted to, like, just impress people, basically. So he just learnt a load of Fall of Troy songs.
Oh, cool. Oh, I did not know that.
And, yeah, from there, like, the tapping thing really came into play, and that's... Like, he uses a lot of open tunings as well. So, yeah, it's really distinctive. And like I said, there's just something... There's a real, like, emotional centre to it. Like, his voice, I find really, like, uplifting.
Mm.
Like, there's just something about it which really, like, really... Really just hits home in a way
that
some of these
bands
don't.
Well, I found that it had that almost quintessential emo... vocal sound, like you think of like that middle America type, like bands I'm thinking of, like in terms of the music it's not that similar, but I got Taking Back Sunday as a reminder.
Yeah,
just that kind of anthemic sing-along, but not resorting to kind of like big poppy choruses, more just something that people want to scream the lyrics along to.
Yeah, it's definitely a really quintessential style of emo singing, but he does it really well, I think. And there's just like there's a lack of pretense to it all somehow. Like they're a family band, by the way.
Oh, really?
The drummer and the bassist are brothers.
Kings of Leon.
Yes, it is the King. No, it's not. It's Billy and Matt Chevalier on drums and bass, and then Dylan's their cousin, and they just grew up in Benson, Minnesota, and just like. It's like a really small town, and there was no scene.
I've seen Fargo, yeah.
And they just, well, yeah, like
just snowing and
you listen to
him, the odd murder.
You listen, yeah, exactly. And you listen to him, and he's properly like so polite and sweet Minnesotan.
I must admit, I didn't really, not that I didn't pay attention, but I didn't really pick up on many of the lyrics. Is there a topic or themes that they address?
Lyrics is not one of the strong points, as far as I'm concerned.
As it's in, like they could do with improvement, or that they're just
they're just not. You know, there's nothing to write home about, really. It's kind of heartbreaky, you know, that classic emo stuff.
Yeah.
Although a lot of it is geared towards like trying to be positive in the face of negative stuff and that kind of thing.
Okay.
And I also read that apparently he writes. A lot. He tries to write from the point of really weird, like protagonists.
Okay.
So, I think the last song on the album is, I think it's about like a piece of trash at the bottom of a garbage can.
Okay.
That falls,
relatable.
Falls in love with a copper penny, and then the penny is taken away from the trash.
So it's almost like Coffee and TV by Blur, a little milk carton walking around.
If you say so.
Have you not seen that music video? Oh,
no,
it's iconic. Like a little like milk carton that's come to life, and then he's looking for a girlfriend, and
I know.
I think she gets run over.
Oh god. Yeah. Spoilers.
Yeah. I didn't know Tiny Moving Parts before doing this review, so my knowledge of them is pretty basic. Like, I had a quick check that they were an emo band. Listening to them, it wasn't what I expected, particularly with the mathy sound. Obviously, I know there are bands like American Football who have a big mathy influence, but that's more just... I don't know, like Capo quite high up the neck and then jangly sound. Yeah. Whereas now that you mention The Fall of Troy, I do hear that similarity. Like I was listening to them, I was thinking this reminds me of someone, but I don't know who. I mean, The Fall of Troy is a lot rougher around the edges and very scuzzy and whatnot. I think that's because they're quite a hectic three-piece.
Yeah.
But yeah. No, I really enjoyed Tiny Moving Parts, so I'll be listening to that again.
Oh, that's cool.
I mean, where would you say this sits in their catalogue?
I mean, I only really know Celebrate that well.
Was that the previous album?
That was the previous album. And I thought it was all right. If I've got a criticism of Tiny Moving Parts, it's that they're kind of they're missing a crucial thing in this genre, which is like just legit bangers.
Okay.
And the first song on Celebrate, which is called Good Enough, is an absolute, like, really hits that nail on the head. Like, it's a fucking tune. And the rest of that album doesn't quite have, like, doesn't live up to that. I think this is a better overall album, but I still don't feel like there's anything that really sticks out as, like, a huge song to me somehow.
But would you say the same of bands like, if you're citing them as an influence on them, would you say like American Football have any bangers?
I don't really know American Football, to be fair.
I mean, because when it comes to emo, I mean, I think you can divide it up into kind of like, say, three different types of emo. You've got like the traditional like mathy American Football sound, which started it. Then you've got the more, I don't know what you describe them as, but like Taking Back Sunday.
Yeah.
And you've got like the poppy sound, which is like Fall Out Boy, Paramore, MCR. And I understand if you're that kind of band, you need the bangers because, you know, you want to get onto like Kerrang and stuff like that. But I don't know, Tiny Moving Parts didn't strike me as that kind of band.
Well, it's... It is mainly because like Good Enough is such a huge tune. And when I pressed play on that, I was like, oh my God, this is insane. Okay. And then the rest of it
didn't quite... Was that the first
one
on the album?
That's the first one I heard. It's the first song on the last album.
That's what I mean.
So, and a lot of the songs have quite a similar tone to them. Like, there's not much variation in the songwriting, I find. Like, they use a lot of the same kind of chord sequences.
On the latest album.
But... like, when I'm listening to it, like, it's just really nice. Like, the guitar makes such a beautiful sound.
Yeah, it did feel
like... And he's a really engaging singer.
Yeah, it was, like, I often feel with bands that are showing off, like, virtuosity, that it can be a bit, like, here's the designated techie part. But this felt organic. Like, even if it was just one bar of crazy tapping stuff... but it sat in between the vocals. And that's kind of, in pop music, that's always where the hook goes. You put the hook in between the vocals, but instead of hooks, they've got crazy tapping. But I enjoyed it. I thought it was really good.
Yeah, yeah. That's what I like about them. Like, it feels really organic. Like, he doesn't know American Football or, like, any of those classic mathy bands.
It's really weird.
It's, you know, like he said, he listened to them and was like, oh... we sound quite a lot
like
these guys.
That claim that Glenn Benton doesn't listen to death metal, he only listens to country.
He invented it, yeah.
Yeah, it's just, so everybody else in Florida in 91 happened to be doing this same thing.
I mean, Glenn Benton is a bit of a dickhead, isn't he?
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, Dylan Matheson is a very lovely chap.
He sounds nicer.
He's so sweet and polite and lovely.
I think I'm going to have to check this band out a bit more. But yeah, I enjoyed the album.
And they're really great live as well.
Oh, like, you've seen them?
Yeah, yeah. They played at the Dome. Like, they sold it out and people loved it. And he can, like, pull all that stuff up properly.
Hammer it on as well.
Yeah. Oh, God. Well.
Let's put an end to that section.
Yeah. Welcome to Billy Padmore, everyone.
Just interrupting this review to tell you about the Mind Noise Network Battle of the Bands competition. If you're in a band or know somebody that is, there are some amazing prizes up for the grabs of the winners of each heat. More on the prizes later, but get in contact with us if you are interested. Now, back to Billy and Max.
On that note, should we move on to my album review?
Yes, Haggard
Cat. Okay, so yeah, Haggard Cat, that is the band I've been reviewing. This is their debut album. For those that don't know the band Haggard Cat, they are half of the hardcore band Heck, rest in peace, who split up last year.
RIP in peace.
Big fan of Heck I am. Max, can I say the same of you?
Yeah. They are, like, I mean, they absolutely blew our minds when we saw them at Arctangent.
Yeah, that was... unfortunately, that was the first and last time both of us saw them, because they then split up.
Yeah.
That was their announced.
But it was, like, it was the set of the weekend, Arctangent.
Yeah,
like,
definitely. And I think, well, they were the first band we saw.
Yeah,
they?
Yeah.
Which was crazy.
Like,
and
we came out of that
being,
like, well, that's it then.
Yeah,
like,
yeah. And considering you've got Converge to
play
the next day.
Yeah.
But anyway, back to Haggard Cat. So their new album is called Challenger. It's just over half an hour long, which I always quite enjoy bite-sized albums.
Yeah,
you know,
definitely.
Leaves you wanting a bit more.
Yeah.
But I feel that I'm going to have to make comparisons to Heck, though. I mean, when you've got two members from Heck in the band playing the same instruments as they did.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah. And on that note, I feel it's going to be a slight negative review I'm giving. Just because what I really loved about Heck is, yes, obviously there are loads of bands doing the crazy hardcore sound, but they did it in such a way where even when listening to the music, you had no idea what was coming next.
Yeah.
And then even more so live. I think when they started their set, less than like 30 seconds in, they were in the crowd.
Yeah,
it was crazy.
Yeah.
Whereas Haggard Cat were also playing that festival the next day. And being a two-piece, I should point out it's vocals, guitar and drums, the setup for the two-piece. I feel that you're kind of limited on your performance.
Yeah,
like, because
definitely.
If the guitarist starts doing something crazy, you've literally just got the drums left to anchor the performance.
Yeah. I definitely find that.
Yeah. And as well as just in terms of them being not as crazy as Heck, I just feel the formula of two pieces a bit done.
It,
you know.
Oh, it definitely is.
Yeah, because when I was listening to Haggard Cat, I instantly had comparisons to 68, which is Josh Scogin, I don't know how you pronounce his name, the guy from The Chariot.
Yeah,
but it's that kind of bluesy sound with a lot of fuzz on the guitar.
Yeah.
And there are loads of bands that already did that. I mean, the White Stripes did it first. I don't know, am I wrong in saying first? They're the ones that made it big.
They definitely did it best, as far as I'm concerned, because, like, Jack White has got such a unique vision.
But then, I mean, you've got other two-piece bands who came out and did something innovative, like Death From Above, 1979, they've got that dance punk sound. Giraffes, they've got that.
Yeah.
Giraffes to pronounce it correctly. They've got that kind of weird mathy, almost electronic sound.
Yeah.
But it's just, it seems to just be bluesy rock that two pieces do.
That's the thing. Like, I have to, if you took the words out of my mouth, really. Like, it does really sound like, you can really tell what he added to Heck by listening to this album.
Yeah.
Like, because there's a lot of kind of bluesy influence on it.
You saying that, though, then it also lets you realise what the other members brought to Heck.
Well, that's my point. Like, it just feels like listening to half of Heck.
Yeah.
And, like, those things were so great together, because that kind of, the chaotic nature that Johnny was bringing to it, Johnny the guitarist, like, melded with the more hooky, like, straight-head bluesy stuff, was what made them so unique.
Yeah.
But then this just kind of sounds, it sounds pretty weak at points to me. Like,
I think the production's good.
Production's really good, actually.
Yeah. And there's some moments where they're going for something sing along and catchy, and I can understand there's a lot of moments in Heck which aren't like that, so they kind of wanted to tick some different boxes.
Yeah.
But at the same time, it's like other bands were already ticking those boxes.
Yeah.
Whereas Heck was an entity unto its own. I mean, like, the comparisons to Dillinger that we made, it was like because of their stage performance. But the thing is with Dillinger is that there's almost like a danger surrounding them.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
Heck was more fun, and it just seemed like four guys just doing what they wanted.
Yeah,
I mean,
definitely.
The drummer was crowd surfing at one point.
Yeah, yeah.
And, like, when that happens, I'm just like, okay, so they literally do not care what's happening. But yeah, with Haggard Cat, I just feel it's just lacking something. Because I think it's too similar to Heck to be, to justify. Like, if he went and did, or both of them went and did, like, some crazy electro experimental thing,
yeah,
fair enough, that would be hard to fit
into
Heck.
Exactly.
But when you've got a bluesy, fuzzy guitar, and then also he screams some of the vocals in it, so
it's
not like you're just doing melodic singing.
Exactly, yeah.
It's like you're already doing a lot of this in Heck, which begs the question, why start Haggard Cat?
Yeah, that was the thing. When we saw him at Arctangent, like, the day, it was on the Sunday, wasn't it? And I was,
Converge,
I was, like, really, you want to spend, you've just been in Heck and you want to spend your time doing this? Like, you can go to Camden Rocks and find like 9 million of these bands like doing that, like, oh, I bought a octave pedal and I own an orange bass Terra kind of thing. Like, and I mean, this album, I went in with pretty low expectations.
Yeah.
And it, like, it's better than I thought it was going to be.
Yeah,
like,
I mean,
I think the second half of the album is better than the first. Like,
there was a bit, I think it was like halfway through the album where it had like a kind of interlude moment and there was like slide guitar playing or like very sparse drumming.
That's the bit, yeah.
Yeah, and I was thinking this is almost as like a, I was getting like a Caius feel at points. Like, you know, some of their more spacey, deserty sounds.
Yeah,
as
yeah.
opposed to the straight on stone and riffs.
And just the slide as well. Like,
yeah.
I fucking love slides.
Yeah, and I mean, like, he plays
so
it well.
Cool.
I'll credit where
he really
it's due.
Does,
he does play it well.
Like, it is really well played.
Yeah.
Like, they're sick musicians, both
of them. I just feel also, though, with a two-piece, unless you're a da band with a loop pedal, your songwriting is really restricted.
Yeah.
I mean, like, we saw Russian Circles, and the first time I saw... I mean, I've seen them a few times. The first time I saw them, I was so amazed that they pulled off the guitar parts live, because their guitarist is so on it with a loop pedal.
Mm.
You'd be looking at them and going, like, where is that second guitarist? Because I'm hearing two very different guitar parts, and he plays it seamlessly.
Yeah.
So they can get away with it. In fairness, they're a three-piece, so they've still got a bassist anchoring it down. But
yeah.
I feel like... Yeah, you need to be something special to justify being a two-piece.
Yeah,
and
definitely.
In a world where the White Stripes already exist.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And
not just where the White Stripes exist, where, like, not just because they did it first, but not only is Jack White an excellent guitarist and songwriter, vocalist, and, like, hooks.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Some of the choruses of the White Stripes, even on, like, what's the album? I think it's often Get Behind Me, Satan is considered like a weaker album.
Yeah.
But you've got songs like Blue Orchid on that.
Yeah,
and that
is
phenomenal. And if that's on the Bad album...
And, like, he's just such a unique character, and he's got a completely... Yeah. A vision that is completely unique to him.
Yeah.
So, like, it is always going to be way more interesting.
Yeah.
I mean, in my old bands, like... Me and the guitarist in that band had a couple of rehearsals where we just, like,
you were playing
jammed.
Drums in this.
Yeah, playing drums in this.
Yeah.
And we just jammed out as a two-piece.
Yeah.
And it's really easy. Like,
yeah.
Like, you can... And this album really smacks of that at points.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you get together and you get all excited about the noise you're making, and it's a little bit mathy.
Yeah.
But it's just, it's so easy to do, I think.
Yeah. I mean, like, also, just from being in bands. We are in a band, I should point that out.
Yeah.
Check us out. We'll give you the name next week. You have to find us. But, from being just in bands, I think there is credit due to 4, 5, however many members playing in perfect synchronization.
Yeah.
And when you reduce it to 2, it's a bit like, oh, it's not as impressive. Like,
Heck,
you had 4 people playing not playing in unison in terms of what they're playing, but they're tight and they're on it.
Yeah.
But when it's just drums and guitar, it's a bit, I don't know, it feels like it's an easier accomplishment.
Yeah. Oh, it definitely is. Yeah. So, yeah, it's a shame, really, isn't it?
Yeah.
I mean, I feel like I quite enjoyed listening to it.
I enjoyed it, but I think it's one of those things that if, like, you were hanging out with mates, having a few drinks and chatting, and they enjoyed this type of music, you could put it on in the background and people be nodding along and whatnot. But I can't see myself in a week, a month time going, oh, I really need to listen to that Haggard Cat album again.
Oh, yeah.
Whereas Heck, so. I'm just like, every so often it's like, yeah, I need some more instructions, because especially that second half of instructions, like leading up to that final track.
Yeah,
that is,
yeah.
I mean, I did not think you could have like a hardcore magnum opus, like a Stairway to Heaven type song.
Yeah,
but
exactly.
They pretty much got as close as possible.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I think that's going to wrap it about up for us. But if you enjoyed our reviews, we'll be back again next time. Who knows what we're going to be reviewing? Maybe something we both like. Maybe something we both hate.
Ah, Possibilities are endless.
I know.
What a world.
So I'm sure you're all itching to know the sponsors of the Battle of the Bands competition, and they are great. Byron's Yard will be recreating the monthly winner single on 7-inch vinyl. It's going to be framed and given to you to keep. We also have Vocal Zone, whose pastels help singers to complete shows they otherwise wouldn't be able to. They'll be giving the winners a few packets too. We've got Moomin Merchandise, who'll be offering laser-engraved band merch to the monthly winners and a massive merch box for the annual winners. And last, but certainly not least, is Fat Angel PR, who will be providing the winners with a PR campaign for their single. Angel works tirelessly to give the bands the best, so do not miss the opportunity to put your name forward. Now, time for Jameson.
All right, Jameson back here again to do another review. This is going to be for Settle Your Scores. The album is called Better Luck Tomorrow. This is out right now on Sharptone Records, which I will be honest, I don't know a ton of bands from Sharptone, but I am so delighted that this came across our desk here because you never know what you're going to get really in this job. And sometimes you judge a book by its cover and sometimes you judge it by its name. And as soon as I heard this band, I thought, oh man, I am going to be wrong. I'm going to be eating my hat on this one. So again, it is called Better Luck Tomorrow. The band is Settle Your Scores. To give you a broad overview, you could call it heavy pop punk. You could call it Day to Remember, 4 Years Strong-esque. But honestly, these guys, I think, are going to kind of revive this genre in a way. I don't know if it's dead. I just know that there's been kind of that pop punk renaissance over the last 10 years or so. I'm talking stuff like State Champs, Story So Far. To me, I never really got on board with a lot of that. I thought I just kind of grew out of it by this age, but I don't know. Settle Your Scores. I guarantee you're going to like this record. It's just so much fun. And I hate to use the cliche of like, it's a summer record and like, roll down your windows and enjoy your friends and all that. But it's so accurate, and it's, why not? That's a great feeling. I don't know. Again, I didn't feel like I got too on board with the pop punk kind of renaissance of the last few years. I feel like it's a lot of imitation, of course, which isn't always a bad thing. But I don't know that anyone really kind of rose above the bar that was set by a lot of those early bands like Newfound Glory and Yellow Card. And of course, Settle Your Scores definitely has some heavier elements. And again, they're going to get those Day to Remember, 4 Year Strong comparisons. But I think they're still doing something really different. I feel like where a Day to Remember maybe kind of settled into like these tired tropes and kind of just started eating itself a little bit, just kind of started repeating the same things. I think this band is really going to kind of take the ball and run with it. I hope so. I hope you guys really enjoyed this record. It opens with this great song called On the Count of Three. What's crazy is I always feel like intros or first songs need to kind of, you know, set the tone. It's kind of that preview to the rest of the record. Of course, not all albums do this, but I know I have it stuck in my head that is how the first song is going to go. It's kind of giving you the preview of, okay, this is what you're in for here. And while it's a great song, you really don't know what you're going to get with the rest of this record once you kind of dive in. A lot of people are also comparing them to Chunk Captain Chunk, you know, meets 4 Year Strong again. But I think that's kind of downplaying how good this record is and how good this band is. They're really diverse. I guarantee that if you went into the history of the band and the history of the members, that they are, again, above standard musicians. This doesn't feel like just a bunch of kids in the garage that threw together, you know, all their influences into one batch. It really feels like a well thought out, well planned record. And I know that sounds like, yeah, of course it is. That's how records should be. But this is only their sophomore record. They've only been around since 2014. Like, that's not a lot of time. And they're able to do something with this record that is so confident. That's what struck me so much about it is, if I didn't know any background of the band, if I didn't know how long they'd been around, how many records they had out, this sounds like a juggernaut. This sounds like, oh, these guys are veterans. These guys are among the top of the crop as far as this genre. And as far as, again, the talent, like I feel like I keep harking on that, but that is what stands out here. This is above the standards that's been set. And it's happening so fast for them. Again, it's only their second record. So many of the songs have these really great choruses, these really catchy hooks. Again, sounding generic, but it's something where Blink-182 kept coming back to my mind all the time. It's got that really, it's got that immature attitude on some parts, but they're able to just do it in a really, again, a new way. And there's almost part of me that doesn't want to review the whole record just out of wanting to just chalk it up to magic and just saying, you're just going to enjoy this record. It's just really fun. They go so many different directions with it. There's, you know, the revenge songs. There's the pop punk, just kind of, it's a Saturday and I'm hanging out in my boring suburban home. I'm going to touch on some of the songs specifically, of course, here. Another great pop punk, you know, heavy kind of staple here, the Clevy Snarky Titles. Always like that. Also, by the way, their vocalist Christian Fisher kind of sounds like he can do anything. So, yeah, this band's going to go places for sure. I mentioned kind of being bored in the suburbs on a Saturday, stuck in the suburbs. That's why it's that quintessential Saturday afternoon in your bedroom song, you know, kind of lying around waiting for plans for the day, walking around the neighborhood, causing trouble, you know, just kind of looking for anything to do. It's that youthful, like, I'm bored. Where are my friends? Let's get this day going. Check out their videos as well. They have some great performance videos, also some great storyline ones. The one I kept coming back to a lot was Keep Your Chin Up and Your Expectations Down. Again, it's that pop punk attitude. It's that jump, jump. Such a cool video. Reminds me of like those great 90s videos that were just really fun to watch over and over. The record ends with the quintessential. It ends with the awesome My Reason to Come Back Home. Slow song to end the record, of course. Always a good staple to have. This is a summer record. It's so good. Again, it's almost hard for me to review out of just wanting to be like, just go listen to it and have a great time. Thanks for listening, guys. You can check me out at Jameson Writes. That's all my socials. Thanks again. Settle your scores. Better luck tomorrow.
Before the Firmals chat, I just want to send out an open call to anyone who might be potentially interested in joining the Mind Noise Network team. We're always looking for a variety of roles to be filled, from podcasters to photographers to reviewers. So get in touch if you are interested. Now on to the chat.
Hey, my name's Rich. I play in Happy Accidents. And I'm in Leicester.
At the Y Theatre.
At the Y Theatre.
Yeah, well, it's a Kermes album release show. And today we're going to be talking about the Firmals, the yes. Body, the Blood, the Machine.
Hell yeah.
First of all, explain the sound of the Firmals.
Okay, so the Firmals is like super kind of, I call it like thrashy pop.
Yeah.
I guess it's like pop punk, but kind of a little bit less, it's like a little bit kind of more garagey, I guess, is what I'd kind of say. That's what I'm going to go for.
Very low. Well, they're lo-fi.
Yeah.
And even on this record, which is a lot less lo-fi, they're still
totally
inspired by that.
Yeah, so they're kind of those bands. So they've been like, they just broke up, but they've been,
yeah, like literally a few days ago, wasn't it?
Yeah, which is why I kind of had the thought to choose the Firmals in the first place. So I was like, it was just in the top of my head that day. So it's kind of like they get less lo-fi every album. Kind of the first one, I think they did like on a four-track cassette tape in like someone's bedroom, and it sounds like that, and then they eventually started paying lots and lots of money for records.
Well, I think having a member of Fugazi, Brendan Canty, doing the producing on this, I think really
yeah
made it kind of, there's a very clear difference to that older stuff.
Totally.
And this, even like I said, they are still quite lo-fi inspired, but there's much high production value.
Yeah, totally. What I like about this record is the production doesn't get in the way of the songs.
No.
I guess, but it also, like, in the same way, so it's not too shitty sounding, but it's also not too polished. It's kind of in that middle ground where I think it sat really nice to them. And like on both, I really like the lo-fi Firmals stuff, but sometimes when they went too far on the other end of the scale, it was a bit like not so into it. So this is like that. This and the record they made after this is like that sweet point for me.
Yeah, this is an amazing record. Like, they just that. I mean, you picked it, so.
Yeah, I didn't know. It would suck if I had to talk to you about it and you hated it.
I mean, I couldn't. This album is brilliant. I think the most obvious thing about it when discussing it is the lyrical content and the theme that goes all the way through it, which is religion, I guess. And the idea of how bad it is, I guess.
Kind of. Well, I think they released it, I think it's 2004 or 2003 or something like that. Really? Okay, it's a little bit after.
I might be getting it wrong, but...
Okay, cool. But it's funny how sort of apt it is now, I think, because it's... I think the concept is sort of a dystopian future in which right-wing, conservative, Christian people run the United States.
I think it's literally described as... I think it was by the band themselves as a government run by fascist folk, like...
There you Christian go. Yeah, so there's, like, loads of theology that runs through it.
Yeah.
There's, like, it's almost, like, 1984 love story kind of thrown in there. And it's kind of... What I really like about it is the way it switches between sort of the antagonists, the kind of... the dictatorship and the fascists, like, from their point of view, and then flipping over to the kind of the rebel side, and it kind of backs back and forth. If you know what I mean, and you get kind of, there's no one viewpoint, and I kind of think it keeps it really interesting.
There's a very clear story running through it all.
Yeah, well, I don't know, like, I feel like there's supposed to be a clear story, but, like, I feel like all good concept albums, there's a lot of ambiguity. If you know what I mean, like, I don't know what the ending is particularly to this record.
No.
But it, you very much know, like, that it does a really good job of, like, setting the scene, if you know what I mean, and then introducing, like, people.
Yeah.
And kind of developing them as well.
I mean, like, I think the first song, like, Here's Your Future, just completely sets the scene of the album.
Totally.
And for me, the first time I ever listened to this album, stupidly, I was like, oh, so it's a Bible stories album.
Yeah.
Because it initially starts talking about God and then his relationship with Jesus and stuff like that. And
yeah, there's loads of just stories straight out of the Old Testament.
Yeah.
There's kind of... thing. And it took me a while to realise that they're even supposed to be sort of repurposed for this story. I just thought they were kind of like reeling off Bible stories.
Yeah, I was like, oh, so it's got a Christian punk band here.
Yeah, it's kind of the opposite in that regard.
How did you discover this record?
I think, I think there's a From Bombs lyric, and I was really into the From Bombs when I was...
Brilliant band.
Yeah, they're really cool.
Well, but I mean, like, Town of the Hawk is...
Yeah, I think it was off their first record that loads of my friends were in that, and then they just nick one of the lines, the Dirty God, Dirty Bodies one. And I was just like, and I heard the Thermals randomly, like, in that song, and then that line just stuck out to me, and I was like, you know when something, like, passes over your head, like, if it's just playing at a gig and you're talking to your mates, and you won't necessarily be like, what the fuck is that?
Yeah.
But then hearing, like, a line you knew, it just, like, clicked my attention, and then I just kind of saw it out. And it's kind of like my perfect band, if I'm honest. Like,
yeah.
I think I was very much looking for something that felt like that, because I feel like, to be honest, like, the older I get, the more kind of less into, I guess pop punk I get, and I was very much into it when I was, like, throughout my teens, and now I'm 26, it doesn't really relate to me as much, but I felt like this was, like, a lot of the same energy and a lot of the same kind of things that I liked about it, but more thought out, and it felt like it was aimed at someone like me.
Do you think there's a lot of parallels you can draw between the Thermals and your own band? Like,
oh, I don't know. Every time someone compares us to the Thermals, I get really psyched. And it happens occasionally. And that's my favourite comparison to get.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, the obvious, like, kind of three-piece nature of it, which is kind of on
totally.
The face value. But I think, like, the way you sing and the way... I think there is very kind of... There's a lot of similarities that can be drawn to.
Thank you.
I think the
that's
influences
cool.
are really clear. Lyrically, this album, and what you said about the Dirty God, Dirty Body... lyric, that's what I wrote down, because
it's
like,
it's so good, isn't it?
There's a lot of lyrics in that album in particular that lead to a lot of self-realization. I think you can really find out a lot about yourself and how you relate and how you think about religion from this album.
Totally. And like, I grew up I was always like Jewish.
Yeah.
And then, like, so, but me and my brother have kind of, as soon as we kind of had the, were at the age where we could kind of fight against it, we were like immediately not into that sort of, we were kind of just like pushed away from it, like, as much as possible. And so religious outcasts on the run from a sort of less than benevolent government is something I think is quite cool.
Yeah, well, that's exactly, you've got parallels there, because
yeah,
I'm pretty
totally.
Sure Hutch and I'm probably I can't remember what the girl's called in the band.
Kathy.
Yeah, I think they grew up in a fairly similar thing. They were Christians, and I think they were kind of forced into it so much that as soon as they could rebel, they
did. Yeah, totally.
And I think there's a lot of repentance towards religion.
Yeah. Well, I like... I was kind of re-listening since I knew I had to talk about it, just because I was like, I don't want to make myself completely look really stupid. But there's like loads of layers to the thing where it's not just like the two people sort of escaping. There's a, like, Return to the Fold is just like, have I made the right decision? Like, has leaving the my religious and all my friends and family and stuff, is that the right thing to do? And there's kind of, and that's kind of where I think my level of interest in the record kind of took another step up. It was just like having layers to the story a little bit more, because I often feel like concept albums are never really as padded out as I think they should be, if you know what I mean. I feel like it's often just like a branding thing.
Yeah. There's a lot of parallels that can be drawn to American Idiot, I think, too, in the kind of concept albums.
Yeah.
That came out at two very similar times.
I saw a lot of people branding it as like a more extreme American, because I think like, a lot of the political aspects. So I really liked American Idiot. I was like 13 when that came out, so it was like I was right at the right age for that. But like, I don't think a lot of the politics really holds up as much as the Thermals record, if you know what I mean. A lot of it's just like government is bad.
Yeah,
I'm a rebel. I feel like much better executed.
And I think there's something to be said about using catchy songs to really hammer into everyone the message that they're trying to get across.
Totally.
Because you're singing about it without even realising.
100%, yeah. It's cool as fuck. And yeah, the amount, there's just so many layers, like so many biblical stories, like just kind of weaved in to like every song, to the point where I feel like occasionally I'll hear something like in other pop culture and hear a Bible reference, and I wouldn't have known that Bible reference, but I was like, oh, I know it from that Thermals record.
That's brilliant though, isn't it?
Yeah, that's much more a part of my life than any sort of religion is at this point.
Well, they're kind of, with what you're saying, they're kind of like promoting Christianity in a way now, because like, you know, the
I don't think they're damning it in any way. I think they're damning extremism as opposed to like any religion. And that's always good.
Even then, there's phrases like master race used to.
Yeah, totally.
Which are quite extreme.
Oh, 100%. It's like right wing Christian doctrine taking as far as it can possibly go. And that's not, to be honest, a lot of times, well, that's what irreligious extremism, I guess, is. If you know what I mean. And it's very core. It's when you start impeding on the rights of others.
Yeah. And out of everything you could have picked any album, what is it about this record that...
Okay, so timing wise I was struggling to pick a record, and we didn't answer the email for like 3 days before.
You're getting a bit of a
The Thermals breaking up had a lot to do with like kind of like clicked in me how much I'm into this record and how, yeah, I guess I always go back to it. I always find something new. If it's on in the background anywhere, it's always full of jams. I feel like it's really funny, like I feel like a lot of bands we play with, they'll like sound check to like these Thermals riffs, and everyone in the room that knows the band would just be like, and it's kind of like a moment in sound checks.
Well, I think if more people heard this record, they'd love it, I think.
For sure. I think there was, yeah, I don't know if they were like, I can't decide if they're like underrated or if I'd have it any other way, because I feel like the people that do know the Thermals really love the Thermals. And also, like, from an objective standpoint, like, this was their peak, and it was like 12 years ago at least, so like, I think they had a really consistent period like then, but kind of, I think they reached like a really good level of popularity. And they really held a really important place in music for people that like that sort of music. So I think I wasn't actually sad that they'd broken up. I was like, you know what, that's cool. Like, draw a line under it. Be proud of what you've done.
I think yeah. With bands breaking up, it's always kind of sad. But if they do it at the right time and they don't drag it out and they go out on a high,
totally,
then it's very special. For me, this album is, it's just kind of the best storytelling.
Oh, cool.
It's, you know, you catchy. It's rugged.
And yeah,
quite
totally.
Ramonesy sounding in a way. That is the body, the Bunny Machine. Is there anything about your own band that you'd like to plug at the end?
We're all human. We all 6 arms in total. That's about it, I think.
Any shows you're going to be playing? You've just had a new album.
No, just the arms, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Now, everyone, that is the end of the podcast. What comes up in 2 weeks is a mystery, but I can tell you that I spoke to Fan Club about albums by the Foo Fighters, My Chemical Romance and The Vines yesterday, and that will be in a podcast soon. So get hyped. I'll see you in a fortnight.